Hi, friends, and welcome to All Things Relatable, a place where stories are shared. It's hard to put a value on a story because the lasting effects it can have are often priceless. An individual's story has the potential to impact our lives in tremendous ways. My hope for you in joining me today is that this episode resonates with you and that you leave enlightened, ignited, and inspired, because it only takes one moment to spark a change and leave an everlasting effect. Hey, friends, I'm so excited to dive into this next conversation with my guest, Daryl, today. Daryl recently returned home from a solo adventure up in the north, one that he seeked out and one that changed him. He walked a whole lot of kilometers in the freezing cold, pulling a sled with his gear. And thank goodness he believes everything will work out as it's meant to be, because the challenges started off right at the beginning of his trip. Although Daryl was on a solo unsupported trek, he says that he was supported by many locals in the area and that he actually had to consciously decide to accept the help because this is something he normally wouldn't do. Although Daryl felt confident in his ability to return home safely, this trip did scare him. And upon his return, Daryl recalls a few standout moments that were very concerning, from thinking he might have froze his fingers, receiving a warning of wolves, and on his return trip home on his layover in Whitehorse. So I can't wait to dive in and hear about all the lessons and wisdom Daryl uncovered along the way and the challenges that he had to overcome. Hey, Daryl, thanks so much for being here today. I can't wait to dive into this adventure.
Hello, how are you?
I am doing great. Okay, so first off, can you fill us in about all the details of the trip? And then what was the catalyst that initially got things set in motion?
I think the initial catalyst that got the, I always want to do something. And that's probably the whole underlying catalyst. Because I think as soon as you stop doing things, I think that's probably when you get old and that's when you start to wither. And yeah, I don't even want to think where we go from there. So I always want to do something. It's important. I think it's important to everybody. And I like to see what's out there in the world. You can read a lot in books, but the books aren't out there in the world. Going out and seeing what you've read is what it's all about. I guess I'm a runner. I ran a lot of miles in my time, and I like that, just because it gives me a chance to get out and see all these things. And I always want to go back and hike it out or live it and see what it's actually about after the fact. It's almost like a reconnaissance mission in some ways. And that's the catalyst for all of this. There was a race, still is. It's the Arctic Ultra 6633. It has a slightly different route than I took. And I was originally going to take the route. I was going to join the race. And a couple of years in the making, I was gearing up for all of that. And I got to a certain point and it just became obvious that I didn't want to race the whole thing. I didn't want to go there and miss all of the good things that could be there. So I decided I would go it alone. And with the race route in mind, generally speaking, is what I would do. But I would do it on my own and see what that encompassed. Yeah, I think it's probably a lot more difficult. There's a lot more self-reliance, a lot of things that won't be comfortable and a lot of things that'll be scary. I think you should do something that scares you every day. So that's underlying. That's why this happened. It's not the first time I've done something like this, but this is the first time that I've done something big like this on my own. It was scary. I am confident, absolutely confident going into it. I think I had all the things. I read all the papers that people have published over things they've done and explored, how to do this, what to do there. But yeah, confident as I was like, I do not know if I'm ready. So I just did it.
Yeah, I think that is such a huge thing to bring to the forefront. I guess it's like you can read all the things, you can get other people's support through their experience, through the different things that they kind of lessons or knowledge that they leave with you. But You can't predict Mother Nature. You can't predict all of the unknowns. You just don't really know with Mother Nature for one, and then your body and your mental state and all of it together. So I guess you can prepare as much as you can. And then you said you didn't know if you were really ready. So then how do you know whether to actually take the leap and do it? And what was this specific trail? What were the details of the kilometers and the weather and all of that kind of stuff?
One fella wrote a good book from his experiences. He did it twice. The first time didn't go so well. Second time he actually podiumed. He was first place, not without a lot of trials. But he had actually a pretty good detailed log of what the trail looks like. And if you follow the route's somewhere around 614 kilometers, a long way. And that is. It's not trail per se. There's ice roads, and a lot of it's on the Dempster. This goes from the actual route goes from Eagle Plains in the Yukon to the Northwest Territories, right up to territories, right up to Tuktoyaktuk. So it's a long ways, and some of it's Dempster. And oh my gosh, there's a lot of history and different things along the way there too. But so that's the route, and you have a. It's called a pulk sled, so it's basically like a sleigh, and you have wheels on it of whatever you choose, or you can buy some things. I made my own, and then you put all the necessary gear. And there's a bit of a mandatory minimum list, and then it's everything that you've practiced and tried through there. So that's the route, and that's what I planned on doing. I planned on getting into Dawson City and getting a ride out. Eagle Plains, starting it from there, and the way it turns out, weather wasn't going to play nice, and all of typically it's the data that I got. The sun rises at 107 degrees, and it gets up to about 13 degrees in the sky, and all that kind of stuff. Generally, a little bit overcast. I actually had quite a few sunny days. I was glad that it started on the 24th. I kind of had that. I wanted to follow kind of when the race starts too, and that's about when the race starts. But I still like the 24th. 24th is usually a full moon too, and that double-edged sword too sometimes, just because it affects how you think and what you do sometimes, I think, as well, if you read into all of that stuff. But so that's nice. I feel like that's a big support there too. And I'm drawn to it. So along I went. That's the route. The weather, being as it was a big moon and clear, kind of meant that it was colder than normal. They actually had more snow than they have in a few years on the road from Inuvik to Tuk. But yeah, a couple of days before I got there, just rewinding back, it was about minus 30 ish, and it did not warm up. It pretty much remained. I think I had a couple of daytime highs that were around the almost hit 28, I think, on the first day in the sunshine at one point, and then started to go back down again. But 32s, 36s. When I got back and started to make my way to a Klavik, that was minus 40. It was cold on the river. But honestly, traveling, it was fine. It was just when you have to do things, fingers and do up bags, and if you have to take things apart. I had trouble with my stove, and then once you get into that, it's got some picky little parts in there, and it's all manageable. But when it's 40 below and you're trying to take a little seal off of a shaft and put a new one on, that's not all that agreeable to the scenario, being it's 40 below, doesn't really help either. Those were the challenges that didn't bother me. The only thing that I can remember really actually bothering me is freezing my fingers getting into my sleeping bag. That's what I. When I think back, it's like, no, it was easy getting out of the sleeping bag and getting out on the trail and getting after it. It was getting into the sleeping bag that was the tough part. And that was actually one notable time that I got frustrated, because I actually froze my Yeah, there was a bite, definitely a frostbite of sorts on my fingers, actually zipping up my sleeping bag. I have pulls on my sleeping bag now. That was the first thing I did when I got home.
I know, hindsight is 2020. When you come back, you're like, okay, if I were to do this over again or going forward, like, what were the biggest challenges and how can I eliminate them going forward and on my next trek to make it more smooth, easygoing, flowing?
Oh yeah, when I go again, I don't know when and I don't know what, but when I go again, because I will go again, I'm not going to have a completely different gear set. I'll have a few, well, probably minor tweaks. There won't be anything major. I'll probably use a slightly different sleigh, and I'll make a different container for everything that to go into one, so I can then do my roll up on the tent and everything else like that. It'll just make it really easy and draw cords and stuff like that. So. And the next thing that I have to do is find a better way of keeping my electronics. I don't even call it a regret. I just did all the smart things too. I wish I would have had more. I ended up with only my phone to record anything, and my phone was buried deep in a pocket. And thankfully it was, because that's the only thing that wasn't frozen for a couple of days, actually, on the way up after I'd got going. Yeah, I had, because I took a tracker. And in reach, I had a Zoleo, so I had satellite, so I could, stay in touch or send messages. I had my son as a point person, because I thought that was probably wise. And he would update others, because there were some other people back home following along that were interested. And yeah, I had nothing. Everything was like, before the first day was out, everything was like froze. I only had my phone and I didn't have cell service. So I could take, a few minor pictures. I just had an epiphany the other day, and it's like there's a person that I follow up there on Facebook that takes pictures. And it's like, why did I not contact him? He could have did some like drone shots and things like that as well, and it would have been like, ah. And the other thing that I wish I would have done, and it just didn't occur to me, like the people that stopped to help along the way, or just to say hi and say, hey, how are you doing? Are you all right? Is things good? You want a sandwich, those sorts of things. And I wish I would have captured some pictures, like some face shots of some of those people. Like, I think I know how I re remember them. And, but I just wish I would have. I think it would have been good for a scrapbook or notes, and just to document everything, because there's a lot of nice people up there. Absolutely genuine. And I think that's probably kind of why I'm drawn back to there. There's definitely some dopamine going on there, that's for sure. 100%.
So, how long and how many kilometers, like how many days and how many kilometers was this trip? Because you say it after the first few days, things kind of froze up your electronics. So, what was the total days and kilometers that you ended up completing?
Essentially, the yeah, over the course of, call it 6 days, plus minus a couple hours, whatever. But yeah, basically 6 days is what I was out and about. I did 240 kilometers is what I ended up doing. And that's by map. I have my Garmin watch, but I didn't have a charge cord. My batteries were dead for that too. Not my watch itself, but the charging batteries for it. So I only used it when I did like 5 kilometer walk around and tuck. A couple little spots is all I used it on. Basically, I go back and like I look at the map and I know roughly where I was and how that looked. So I think when I look back at it, it's about 240 kilometers. So yeah, it's about a marathon a day is what it worked out to. And that's a marathon a day, pulling about 100, somewhere between 180. If I use the scales from when I transported everything down there on the aircraft, I would probably be about 180 pounds, because I had the bags were a little bit lighter on the airport, but then I had 6.5 liters of water and thermoses, and each one of those that'll add about 18 pounds itself right there, just because they're heavy and it's the liters of water that's in there. And then all the things that I didn't necessarily need or use, because I didn't have a home for them per se to put them, I didn't know where I was going to end up at with all the twists and turns as I go. The original plan, I guess it kind of went out the window. It went out the window when we lifted off in Whitehorse, and that's okay because I started in Inuvik instead of getting to Dawson and then going up from there. And I'm actually very grateful for that. It was that's where I needed to be. And I think that's where you just have to have the faith that you're exactly where you need to be when you're there. And I think that's probably something to know, even just going on about your daily business. You might be frustrated, you might have trouble, you might be whatever that looks like, and hopefully happy, but you're where you need to be.
This trip, we know you made it back alive. You did like a marathon a day carrying like almost 200 pounds, which is insane. Yeah, right off the very beginning, things didn't go the way as planned. You ended up in a different place starting out. And then I know even some of your gear, your essential gear that you needed, didn't make it. So can you talk about that?
That happened before I even got out of Alberta. I had all the things dotted and crossed off. There was a couple of things I got in Edmonton, just sort of last minute, and that probably wasn't smart necessarily, but it was like okay and totally manageable. But I had my stove, which is kind of an essential piece of gear, especially if you need heat when it's minus 40 and water. I didn't know how much water I would use exactly, like, because I'd not gone on a 6 day trekking mission in 40 below to actually test that. And those conditions change and your body changes. So you'd never really know how much water you'll need. But I knew I would. Probably since there was no checkpoints, like the race has checkpoints that would provide you some water. I had none of that. So if I was to run out of water, I would have to start melting snow. And even just to keep my water on board for more than days. My thermoses are good for about 2 days. And at 2 days on a fresh thermos with boiled water in it, it would still come out warm. So that's good. But
Wow.
I would rotate them just so I always made sure I had warm water. So you need your stove for that. I had to check my baggage, the oversize, because I had big bags and the sleigh and all those things, running it through. And then, so I told them it's all the camping gear. I kind of give them a rough idea what they're looking at so they know. And they pull it through and they're like, yeah, they had problem with like one thing that was explained out, no problem. And then they had my case with my stove and my fuel bottles in. And of course I had all the fuel bottles empty and drained and everything like that. And they're like, oh, so I had to open that up, pull it apart. And it's like, it's got fumes in it. Well, I didn't have fumes in it actually. It didn't even, when you open it up, it didn't even, nothing, but it smelled of gas. Well, of course it does. You put gas in it. That's the fuel. And they're like, oh yeah, we can't. And I'm like, I can put water in it, like fill it up with water. I don't want it to freeze per se, but I can fill it up with water. Like that displaces all the fumes. If there was a fume in there, that would be like zip nada. Nah. So they took both fuel bottles, not even just one, but both fuel bottles, and the low temperature pump that I had. No, the regular temperature pump, because I got it back up. I'm like, this is 4 o'clock. And I called my son, who was my point person, I said, and said, like, I'm not sure what I'm going to do now. Can you like make some calls? I'll try and do what I can on my phone, but I got to get through security and everything. Because he doesn't have time to run back. He'll never get back through security and can't mail him forward. Anyway, so he starts looking around in Dawson City in Whitehorse for him. And he actually, we didn't find anything in Dawson City, but he did find one in Whitehorse. But it's like, meh, I can't get to it because they'll be closed when I get there and I have to leave before they open. I'm like, man. But thankfully, as the whole universe works, he knows through friends, and he stayed up there once with this marvelous lady that lives up there, and she stopped her day and rushed over to get this equipment before the store closed. And yeah, when I got there, I didn't know really how exactly big the airport was or anything, but it's short walking. Ta-da! There's this lady, and she's got two fuel bottles in her hand. I'm like, you're Amy. So we talked for a bit. It was just so nice. So that's how I got my gear. So thankfully that worked out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like, what a blessing this woman is. It's like one small kindness. You really don't know when you go out of your way to do something that might be like, not a big deal, kind of meaningless to you. Of course, I want to help. Of course, I will go out and get the gear for you that can totally transform and change a trip, a day, the trajectory forward for someone that all it takes is one little kindness. And this woman who you didn't know went off to the store, got you your fuel, and met you at the airport to support you from the beginning on this trip that you would take. So, yeah,
Yeah,
what a blessing that woman was.
that's the thing. And like, I think everybody, like, she helped a lot. Like, even just as simple as somebody driving by, like, yeah, he's just like, oh, here, like, he was doing a night shift, like, heavy equipment, clearing the roads and things like that. And he's like, yeah, how you doing here? Like, take some of my lunch. And he's like handing me sandwiches and bananas. And it seemed like nothing to him, I'm sure. And he was just happy to say hi. And what's this fool walking down the road for, kind of thing. But it was like monumental. And it seems like a little bit over the top to even say that, but it really was monumental. Just because it got me farther down the road, and it was like some food, it was a face, it was the kindness, and it got me farther. It's absolutely awesome. And he has no idea. And I'm sure he has no idea that just was like in my mind. It's like, wow. There was one fella that actually, speaking of kindness, and it's just like they stopped by when I was just starting the first day or the first night, and I was kind of getting my camp set up a little bit and finding a spot. And I was a little bit chilly. And they stop and they roll down their window and they're like, oh, would you like some tea? And I'm like, yeah, sure. That would have been pretty nice at that stage of the game. Well, we don't have any, but I said, oh, no, that's fine. That's fine. Like, I've got hot water. I'll make some in a bit once I get everything set up. And they're like, no, we'll go back. Like, no. Like, I'm out of town. Like, you have to like go home and come back. Like, no. Anyway, I got my camp set up and I had crawled in my sleeping bag. And next thing you know, I heard like a vehicle go by because I'm literally beside the road. And he's like, oh, come out. So I come out and he's like, wow. I jumped in his truck. He's like, yeah, I've got some things for you. And it's like, wow. And honestly, it was like talking to to an uncle that had passed. But like the mannerisms and all that sort of stuff. And it was just so, it was basically like I was jumping in and talking to an uncle that I haven't seen in 6 months, maybe. And next thing you know, he's like, he's got this bag and he pulls out like this plate of chicken that they had just cooked up. And there was like a thermos bottle for making tea with hot water in it already. And it was like Eskimo donuts and sandwich like for the next day. And it's like, wow, really? Wow. Who does, like, nobody does that around here. You know what? That's not, probably not true, but it's a pretty rare case that anybody does that around here, I think. And if I don't see it and I don't know what I need to look for it and find it, because it would be so nice to know that there's people like that around. And what you typically see is they finger you and cut you off and honk their horn because you haven't whatever, right? It's like, oh man, it's just such, it was uplifting to like see that there's actually people in the world like that still,
Just happy to
which
help,
was
to give a
like,
hand
it
that,
makes the trip.
yeah. Okay, let's talk about this because you said that before, like it took you actually consciously thinking about accepting the help and accepting because normally you wouldn't. So when did you have like a mind shift? Like switch where you're like, okay, these people are willing to help. They want to help. It's like the face, the homemade sandwich, the conversation, the connection. Like, what was it? Was there a moment where you were like, okay, just like surrender? You can give, but in the giving and receiving, it's like a loop. It just never ends. So we need to get to that point where we are willing to receive or we like interrupt the flow. So, how did you actually get to that place where you were open to receiving this goodness and kindness from these people who didn't know you and wanted to help?
Somewhere in the 6 months before I left, I would say, I knew that I wanted to. It's not that I needed to. I knew that I wanted to. just like for some fundamental changes. I want to be a better person. I don't think I'm a bad person, but I always want to be a better person. I always want to be better than I was yesterday. And that doesn't, whatever. And I make mistakes, and I always will, but I'm going to keep trying to be a better person. I know that would help me be a better person. It would help me if even indirectly, because that I finish my journey and I get to see the things I see and know what I know, and I knew that that would probably help me. And then also on the physical side of things, if somebody offers you a warm place to warm your fingers or have a bite to eat, like you'd be a fool not to do that. Like, no, I'm going to carry that forward. Because I always want to help people too. I feel like I would do that for someone and no problem too, but it hasn't really happened. I guess I've probably helped people and I've never known it to. I hope I have. That's just something that I think is probably better, and I'll probably tell my kids that too as they're going along. I think maybe they ask for help too sometimes. I'm not sure. But it just seemed like a good lesson as well. I think you get farther down the road, and I think it makes a better connection. Or
Yeah,
reinforces connections
absolutely.
if there's already some connections there.
Well, and you said something even like bringing it one step forward, like not only accepting help that people have to offer, but actually asking for help when you need it. That
Yeah.
is like not a weakness, but a strength to ask for help when you need it. So here you are in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the north on this trek, encountering like different strangers and kindness and accepting the help. What was it like when you were on your own? You did like a marathon a day-ish. So you're out there trekking through the snow and the ice. What is that like all of that time?
It sounds horrible and grueling, and maybe it is, and maybe it is. The end of all of it's what you make of it. It was beautiful. That's what it was. It was fucking beautiful, even if it would have been cloudy. Like on the there was some cloudier days and stuff too. And even what it was, and even when the wind was in your face a bit when you turned a corner, because there was a lot of bends on the road. And even when you turned a corner and the wind turns from your back and starts biting on your cheek a little bit. I was so content. And I don't know if it's because it's so silent up there that it just like lends you to some sort of calmness that you can be that way. I don't know. I haven't figured all that out, but it's all things that I can contemplate. But it was 100% content. Like I say, like I really was absolutely content. And there was a few, no, well, it wasn't a few times. It was a number of times that I was in my sleeping bag and getting my rest. However, apparently icing my muscles because I was laying literally on ice. That, yeah, there was like when I would roll over, yeah, there was definitely some touchy nerves and some soreness. But honestly, like when I got up in the morning and got out of my sleeping bag, I was content. I was completely happy doing that. I pushed one day I pushed and got about 60 kilometers in. Yeah, definitely some back soreness when I was doing like my marathon a day-ish, and that wasn't because I planned it, it's just the way it works out. I was like unknowingly, I was like hours or kilometers from like getting a really sore back. Because when I pushed farther, it was like, yeah, this is really starting to like, oh, I'd have to pause for every once in a while. Like, you'd get a few kilometers in and you'd pause and then you'd kind of like bend and stretch your back as much as you could. And it was just like maybe like a 30-second pause kind of thing, stretch, stretch, and then carry on again. But even doing it, I was still content. I didn't suffer at all. And I think that's a choice too, but.
That's incredible, yeah, that you can get out there and wake up in the mornings and be content and ready to carry on the next part of the journey. So you said like kind of in the quiet, calm stillness, were there any like revelations or thoughts or wisdom that kind of snuck in through the journey that really sticks out?
I remember, I just think I was in the right place. I was in the right place that where I needed to be and at the right time. You know, that's definitely a revelation. And, you know, nothing else matters at that point. There's a whole world going on and all the things that happen in it, but like nothing else matters. And when you can get rid of all that clutter and all that noise, kind of like the relationship of it being silent up there, it's almost like a metaphor of sorts. And you get rid of all the things that matter. They all matter to a certain degree, but at the end of the day, they don't matter. They have no bearing on where you're at and what you're doing. It just makes you smile. You know, when you're pulling a load, you're pulling 190 pounds and you're going up a hill and you're like taking 50 paces and then you take like a 15 second pause and you let out your breath and then you pull another 50 paces again because it's like, oof, this one's getting me. And you can look up and you see the sun and you smile. Yeah, there's tears of joy on a number of occasions. And I think, I don't know if that's not really an epiphany or anything major, but it's just like, I think it all kind of goes together and you just know that's a good thing. And it spurs you on and makes you curious. It's like, if you can do this and be, and realize, you know, and get rid of some of the noise, then let's maybe start working on getting rid of some of the noise and do some more hard things and find out what else is possible and where else you can go and how happy can you be somewhere else and can you be a bright enough light to make somebody else realize they can be happy as well. It's like you were saying earlier, it's like the little things, like you don't even know. But little things like that maybe make a difference. And if that's the case, then I guess you've done something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You said before that you're always kind of, you're on this journey like of evolution and growth, and always it's like, that's who we are. You are constantly evolving and growing and wanting to be better. And so when you push yourself and get out of your comfort zone and just, like you said, take yourself away from the noise, because there's so much noise constantly around us in our familiar kind of routine and what we do the day to day. When you actually take yourself out of that and just are just with yourself and can be present and enjoying and having so much gratitude for just being able to walk this journey, this path, that is kind of like, I think, an uncovering and a shedding and just like a tuning in with yourself, where it's like when you come back, I'm sure there's parts of you that you left out there in the north and you came back a different person, another iteration of yourself, when you actually do something that's out of your comfort zone or a little bit hard or stretching yourself. That is part of the evolution and growth, when you put yourself in those situations on purpose.
Definitely. No, you would never come back the same person. And especially if you have some intent and you know that you want to make some changes and you know that you're in a place that you don't necessarily feel like you ought to be. It's like having a sore foot. So you walk just a little bit different way or you put some medication on it so that it's better. And that's no different than this. You try to leave what you don't need and remember the things that you've figured out and you know, and then start walking down that path instead. It's always going to be another turn and another turn. I definitely long to go back there. I'm in a different place now. To be honest, I'm having a little bit of trouble relating in a, I wouldn't say philosophical, but you're kind of wondering what about this and what about that now. So I don't know. I'll read some more books and I'll talk to some more people and see what that looks like. And maybe I have to go on another walk somewhere.
Yeah, I think you're a point of attraction, you know, when you're talking about like the philosophical or those ideas. It's like, well, now that you are you know, vibrating or at this point of attraction, it's like, then you will attract those same kind of people or experiences or books or whatever it is that's to come next. And I like how you're talking about, I believe this too. It's like, you're constantly evolving and changing who you were yesterday, depending on what's happened, your experiences is you're going to be a little bit different person today, next week, next month, but there is really no rush in it all. You're kind of meant to go and be guided in the ways and the divine timing that it's going to be. So you're longing to go back. If you went back, are you thinking about like doing another trek up there or just going back to like visit and explore locally and connect? Or is there like a specific intention for going back that you're drawn to right now?
I would go back with somebody. I don't know if I would do it solo again. I want to share some of the experience. And I think I could, even with somebody else there, and I'm like, even my son or something like that. I've got a couple of sons. The older one, I would take the younger one there too as well, but it would be a different scenario completely. Yeah, just like to show them what it is, and they could glean what they glean from it. But at the same time, there's nothing stopping me from experiencing more and gleaning something else from it as well. Because there's so much to see up there, but I would like to see more of it, and I would like to see some more people and experience some things. Maybe I would go to a slightly different place. I don't know. Say you'll learn something from it. If you don't learn anything from it, I don't know what to say to that. I don't know. But there would be more things to learn for sure, and I think I would see more kindness, and maybe I get to help somebody go and experience some of that. That's something that I would like to do one day as well. Who knows, maybe I do it sooner or later, but I would like to be able to like guide other people and help them see some of those things if they thought they weren't quite capable of going on their own. I don't want anybody to ever say, oh, I can never go up there. It's like, absolutely, you could go up there. Anybody could go up there. Anybody could do a lot of things. We just need to know how to do it, or we need a little bit of help to do it.
Okay. You talked about like the challenges and stuff. I want to go back to when I first, the intro, when I talked about freezing your fingers off, you kind of mentioned that a bit, the warning of wolves, and then this layover and White Horse on your way back, like take us through, you know, you've talked about so much of like the greatness of this trip, but what were some of the challenges or like the scary moments where you're like, holy crap, like, what is going on here?
I was going down, I was on the ice road. And so you're on the ice road, and there's some banks on the side, some are like steeper, some aren't. And you're a little bit more into the forested area again, not like you are in the farther north. And I'm going along happily, and I've spent lots of time in the forest by myself and things like that too. I'm kind of a scared Sasquatches, but anyway, that was an excursion. And she pulls up and she's like, are you all right? And I'm like, oh, no, I'm good. I'm good. I'm just making my way and let her know where I was traveling and stuff. And she goes, oh, I have a cabin that's like a couple of bends up there. Well, it turns out the bends are probably about a day and a quarter for me. And at that stage of the game, I'd have to walk through basically through the night to even get to this cabin. She's like, are you not afraid of the wolves? And I'm like, not really. I hadn't really considered that I should be afraid of wolves. Is there a problem? She goes, well, you have a gun. And I'm like, no. I have bear scares. Oh, well, they don't care anything about those, she said. And I'm like, well, I guess we're just going to find out what the creator has in store for me then. it was, and honestly, that did kind of unnerve me a little bit as I, because at that stage of the game, I was starting to head into the night. I'm like, oh man, like, is this going to be a problem now? Because I didn't really think it would be, because I was sleeping in a tent and everything too. I don't know. I guess I hadn't really said that, but not a lot of protection there if a You know, a bunch of wolves wanted to jump on you, I suppose, but historically they don't do those sorts of things. So I thought, well, maybe I'll just be like the wolf whisperer.
Yeah. Like dancing with wolves.
Yeah. Oh, I did. I did see a grizzly once on the trail, not up there, of course, but and that all turned out well, given the fact that he was probably only about closer than 20 feet to me. So I thought, well, if I can handle that and stay calm, I should be able to handle wolves. And I see no wolves. Fingers, frozen fingers and things. Definitely at those sorts of temperatures with no other, like I didn't have a hot tent or anything else. So like warming things up, drying things out, you just can't. You really do have to use your head as much as you can and make good decisions. You're only near as I could tell, and from some of the experience that I've seen up there, you're really only 5 minutes away from some sort of demise. It only really takes about 5 minutes to freeze your fingers. And I know like when they have frostbite warnings and stuff, you get frostbite in like, 3 minutes or whatever, like even locally here. It's like I've never really considered that because I've never really experienced it like that before. But this is I tried to push into the night a little bit once, and fabulous humans stopped by and offered me some good cheer and support, which is terrific. And they said, oh, do you want a Gatorade? And I'm like, yes, I do. So I quick chat because I didn't want to stop long because I thought maybe I would start getting cold if I stopped too long. So I just quick 1 minute and off I go again. But I was like contorted and I had this iceberg under my nose from breathing and sticking to my mustache. And it's like 2 inches long, literally. And I'd have to take vice grips and like crack it off with vice grips so I could do certain things. And anyway, I managed to drink about half, not quite half of the Gatorade and it froze. Not totally surprised, but it was good. I'm glad I had it. It perked me up and that was great. But I wanted to push into the night before I started getting out some warmer clothes and dryer mitts and stuff on because I knew my mitts were starting to get damp. And through all this process, I wasn't like focused on my hands as much. And then I realized that my gloves were not like they're froze, like they were not bending. And if they're not bending, that means my hands aren't warming them up to make them not bend and keep my hands warm. So I'm like, ah, but by the time I stopped and undid all my buckles for my harness and went back and dug out my gloves, I basically had like out of my 10 fingers, I probably had about six of them that were essentially froze. They had no feeling at all and didn't for over 20 minutes. Yeah. So I have these fabulous fur mitts that have a shearling lining on the inside of them. I had them inside there and I couldn't find anything inside. And I managed like with, half a thumb and whatever to like have them on my poles. And I just kept my body moving and kind of acknowledged the fact that they were frozen. That's not a good thing, but didn't focus on it as being a detriment and just made sure I was going to stay warm and was in a direction they thought out in about, I would say, probably in my mind. I think it was, I didn't look at the clock, of course, but in my mind, I think it was probably at least 20 minutes before they started to tingle and get feeling back in them. I hadn't actually really considered, like, if I had to stop somehow and like, yeah, I don't know if I could have at that stage of the game. I don't know if I could have undone the buckles for my harness. And even just like I regrouped because I had all that frozen gear that I talked about earlier. That was my SOS button that actually like go out and they literally like alert authorities with a flick of a button. You don't have to talk to anybody. You don't have to send messages because I literally could not have sent a message. Because I wouldn't be able to type anything. I can't type with my nose. Even to get those out, like the way I had to put them on, and I'll find a better way eventually again. But they, it's like a 5 minute process just to get them out so I could actually even look at it or see it. And if that's the case, like how fast does that go downhill from there before you start getting like some chills and whatever, maybe hypothermia and stuff like that too. I thought, yeah, I think you know when that happens, but how do you handle it? Because I thought I was having hypothermia or like a couple of days into it too, and I was shivering in my sleeping bag, but I talked myself out of that when I was just being outrageous. So,
Oh
and then
my
I stopped shivering.
God.
I've done that on top of mountains before too, where I thought I was starting to freeze, but you just give your head a shake and talk yourself out of it, and you're fine. But these fingers that I couldn't feel, I know that wasn't a thing. And there was no
Yeah.
talking. There was no talking myself out of that. But it was a good realization to like, and I kind of knew, like I'm foolish about it, but I was like, yeah. And it's just like, so there was kind of a thing. It's like, okay, that's why I wasn't. If it was racing, you would race into the night and you would go as long as you can. And then you'd like bivvy for maybe 2 hours. And like get, a couple hours of sleep, maybe 4 hours on a good night, maybe or something, if you want to stop longer. But you're only like 20 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, not much. And over the course of like the race is 9 days, you're going to be exhausted and overtired, and you're not going to think as well as you would if you didn't. So I did actually make a conscious decision that I wasn't going to push long, long, long days and try and do like monstrous miles on my own, because inevitably I would make a bad decision somewhere and I'm sure it wouldn't serve me well. So I did actually, like, I don't know, I think I probably, by the time I would crawl into my sleeping bag, it would probably be like 10 o'clock, and then sunrise was 9:45 in the morning. I would get up before sunrise, probably, I don't know, I'd probably wake up about like 6:30, 7 o'clock, and kind of start getting my stuff ready so I could get moving probably a little before the sunrise. I think there was one morning where the sun was basically almost up.
So yeah, that's good to like push the envelope and then also know your limits, know when to stop, know when to check in. When we previously chatted, you had mentioned to me that you used to be like really into running. I know that you still have maybe some races that upcoming races, or you were really into running, but you kind of shifted because when you would run, then you'd always want to go back and slow down and really soak in all the things along the way that you kind of missed. So going forward, do you have any runs or any trips that you're looking forward to, or are you kind of shifting now out of the racing?
It's a contemplation when I run right now. And so I'm back, I'm like running, and I'm not running super far, 10 kilometers here and there and that sort of stuff. And but that's a contemplation that I wonder about while I'm running. Like, I'm kind of curious where I'm at. And yeah, there's a few races that I'll do, actually, challenges, I guess, kind of race slash challenges. There's one in Grand Cache that we do six peaks. I want to do that. I want to do that with my son. So there's something a little bit more than just me doing it for me. I've done it before. And you know what? If there was like a marathon somewhere that I'd like to do, I'd totally do it. I still want to run. I feel like I still want to run, and I still want to challenge myself, and I still want to work hard and sweat, get exhausted like that. But
Yeah.
there's I'm definitely, I still have that adventure side of things where I want to go. Adventure, yeah, cool. Explore and the curiosities. I still want to do the Athabasca Trail, David Thompson from a long time ago. That'll be something. I still have Kakwa Robson in the winter that I want to tackle. And I don't know that anybody's ever done that. Back in the day, like, I don't think the natives even did that in the wintertime, because it was just absurd to go that far. They would go out, but they would have like a circle and a home in the middle of it, of sorts, a base. So that'll be something that it still weighs in my mind. And then we're helping with a documentary in Monkman Pass that goes basically the not entirely the whole Monkman Pass, like the first part. But once you get to like Tumbler Ridge, and then from there, and that'll go all the way through to Prince George. That'll be this summer. We did a little bit of work there last year in the fall, and that's where I say, like, I've ran it before, but then you go back and you hike it, and you camp in it. It's like amazing. It's completely different, and you see like all the things that I ran past and like maybe had a slight awareness of, and actually seen it and touched it. And it's like, wow, That's why I think you always have to go back. It's a reconnaissance mission. And then you can go back and linger and experience and tell everybody about how cool it is. And in a sense, that's what this documentary is going to do. There's a few facets to it, but it'll be epic when it is. I'm glad to be part of that. I've actually wanted to do that on my own, ergo back to, doing it with people besides just doing it solo is pretty cool because I've wanted to do that one. I was doing research in like the history of the trail, probably about 2 years before I was approached to do this documentary help. And yeah, it's pretty cool. It's like, wow, this is like hand in glove on this one. This is pretty cool. So
Very
that's
cool.
on the docket as well.
Well, you can do both. Yeah, you can do both. You don't have to choose. You can run, do your races, and you can slow down and explore. And how cool to be a part of this documentary that is like getting you out into the wild, doing what you love. And then you've said it a few times as we've talked. It's like you love to go experience, and then you also want to bring people or love to bring people to share with them these different places that you have been to or experienced, and let them take what they are going to take away from it. And then you can go back again, keep going back. So, okay, before we close off, I just want to hear about your trip home, this last fearful, scary, I don't even know what to call it, layover in Whitehorse. You finished this whole, like, how many hundreds of kilometers? You're getting ready to go home, and I haven't heard the story. So, tell us about this, the kind of final part of your story.
Kind of like one of those things where it's like, I'm back in society now. Oh man, I got off the I got in, and because I have oversized bags, by the time I got out of the airport, I was going to rent a vehicle because the next day I had a bit of a layover in Whitehorse. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to rent a vehicle and then I could check out town like walking, but I can also, like, if I want to go see something a little bit further away, then I can. So I was going to rent, like I wanted to. And then that didn't play out because there wasn't a vehicle. And the one company didn't have a vehicle, the other company wasn't there. I tried to dial the number for some like remote assistance, it didn't answer. So, okay, I'm like, this taxi guy is there. And I'm like, you know what, meant to be, I'll take the taxi. So I jump in with him and he's like got a van so he can like literally hold all my gear easily. So I jump in with him. He said, where do you want to go? And I'm like, well, I don't have a hotel booked or anything. So like, whatever you recommend. So he goes, oh, I know this good place. And he takes me there. We pull up and I'm like, this isn't the place that I would normally pick. I'm like, I feel like I'm definitely downtown in a gold mining town that might be just a little bit rough around the edges. And so I'm like, you know what? It'll be fine. I'm good. Like motorcycle traveling and touring, I've slept in some crazy places too. So, and it's like, and like the first night was pretty okay. And then the second night, oh my God, I got woke up and I don't even know what time it is. I feel like it was like 10 o'clock or something. And I don't know what was going on in there, but I'm just like, oh God, I hope I don't get shot. Because it sounded like there was like furniture getting completely rearranged in not such an organized fashion upstairs or wall beside me or however. I'm like, I feel like I need to just like pack up all my gear and go down the street. Oh, anyway, there was no bullets coming through the wall and I was fine, but I was just like, ah. So I was like, that was probably one of the not so good decisions. Maybe next time I'll just pause for a second and like pick that other hotel.
Yeah.
But it was like, yeah, it was kind of disturbing to be honest, because I'm like, oh man. And I thought there was all nice people here, but apparently there's all sorts of people, all sorts of places.
Yeah. Yeah. You survive the trek and then you almost don't make it home.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking. So I talked myself down anyway. But to be honest, I did get up earlier, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna get to the
Yeah.
airport. So I got. Well, that's the thing. Like, I couldn't just like pack up and go because I literally had like like all this 190 pounds of gear and all the tires. I didn't say that before, but all the tires on my sleigh were inoperable, but they were also flattened anyway because it was on the airport or in the air. So I couldn't like just like load it on and like drag my stuff around either. So anyway, so I got my taxi and went through the drive-through and then spent several hours in the airport.
Just probably with your shoulders down and relaxed, feeling a lot
Oh.
safer.
And miraculously, all my bags, like the oversized ones, and I ran them through the scanner.
Yeah.
Totally fine.
Wow.
Take all the fuel bottles you need.
Oh my
Oh,
gosh.
yeah.
Well, this trip sounds absolutely incredible. What a great way to spend your time, to go out into the unknown, into the wild, and step away from all the noise and really just be with yourself. Thank you for sharing your journey and all the lessons and wisdom that you had to share. I know that this story is going to inspire the people listening to step out of their comfort zone, maybe not go up into the north and travel hundreds of kilometers, but even if it's just like a little step outside the comfort zone, whatever that is for them, I definitely know this will be the inspiration to open up some new and exciting opportunities for the listener. So thank you so much for sharing your story. And where can everybody get in touch with you?
I don't have like a million different things, but I did when we did the trip, we did Facebook, and it's Daryl Hudak's Arctic Trek 2024. I think that's exactly how it's written. But if you put in Daryl Hudak, it'll come up with Arctic Trek and you'll see that. That's some of the details. Fewer than I wanted originally, but when you don't have frozen gear and batteries, that's what happens. And then Daryl Hudak on Facebook, and same for Instagram.
Amazing. Okay. Well, thank you again for sharing. And I loved hearing all about this adventure.
Yeah, go early, go often. It's good, and it's just like you were saying, go out and write your own chapter. I think that's a quote from Paul Watkins, who did the race before too, but he's whatever that chapter looks like, and whatever that is to whoever it is, I just go do it.
Thank you for joining me on today's episode of All Things Relatable. If you know someone that would relate to this episode and get value from it, please pass it along. Also, if this episode resonated with you, I would love for you to rate, review, and subscribe.